Welcome into another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, I'm Jason Williams. We are back. We are a little later this week. Most importantly, we hope everyone is okay. This is a crazy time. We were a little delayed this week as we were trying to figure out the logistics of how we're going to keep the podcast going, as our newsroom is like many other Americans. We're all working from home, our individual homes. And so we figured it out. We know that you want this podcast. And here we are. We have, I think, a really jam-packed, informative episode today. We have Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley coming up. A lot of fun, not fun, a lot of questions that we really want to ask him about leading the city through a time of crisis. Hopefully, maybe he might even break some news. And then after that, we're going to have the Inquirer executive editor, Burl Love, on to talk about all the coronavirus coverage. I'm looking forward to asking him some questions about, you know, what's going through. Much the same way John Cranley leads a city, how do you lead a news organization in a time of crisis? And so really looking forward to having both of them on today. Sherry, how are you?
I was really looking forward to this. I love doing the podcast, but, you know, I miss my peeps, so it's good to be seeing you. I think, you know, a special shout out to Silent Phil, who actually has a home podcast studio. It is extremely impressive. So we are coming to you today from Mount Washington.
Yes, we are. And we are socially distanced right now. Silent Phil.
I've spent the early part of the week like sitting next to you and working, but yes. We are now, and the Coolidges are pretty much self isolating at this point.
We are all even as we speak here, we're all socially distanced. Silent Phil set it up very nicely.
Hand sanitizer
for us, and is
picked up at a conference, as all you know, hand sanitizer is in the past, and now it'll be purchased at the store on an ongoing basis. I'm sure.
It is a wonderful studio here in his. Place in Mount Washington. Wow. Anyway, where do we even start? Let's jump to it. Because
as we start, we are getting a text alert. We do have our first confirmed positive case of the COVID-19.
In
Hamilton County. And so I think this is just going to climb exponentially as we go throughout the week. And this podcast does live at Cincinnati.com all week. So we don't want to talk a lot about the details because those are going to be changing every day. But and not unexpectedly today, you know, with the delay in testing, which we'll be talking about.
And that literally, you're that just happened. I just watched as we're talking here, your phone lit up with the alert. So, wow. Where do we?
We got to talk about the election.
Yeah,
we're still Jason and Sherry.
Yeah. We talked about the election, and then I'm like, oh wow, first confirmed case. Yes, the election. You talked about before we jumped on the mics here about where you and I and Dan Horn and what was going on in the newsroom Monday, and we were all just like, my gosh, take folks through that.
Let me scene set for you. So we have been working from home. Burl's took our safety into account very early on,
yes.
And we're all working from home. So we have a Teams meeting with the entire politics team, which we had a lot of fun with because our pets were all sitting on our laps. Julia Fair's cat knocked over, broke her lamp. But we had, you know, we're having an election tomorrow. We had just a meeting. Who's doing what? Where are we going to be? It's going to look a little different. There aren't, you know, election night parties, and how are we going to handle that? But it still seemed like it was going to be an election day. The 2 p.m. Governor DeWine's press conference. And honestly, we had heard some things, like, as the daily press conferences go, some things kind of leak out and there's some, you know, pre-writing, but it was really just a bombshell that day where he said that the election day would be moving June 2nd. He didn't say that he would unilaterally be doing it. He just said that it would be and he'd be taking all the steps, but it seemed very definitive.
And it was his request along with Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and that they were requesting it and then going to take it to the court system initially.
And it seemed like a foregone conclusion that that's what needed to happen during the pandemic. And that seemed like, okay, this was happening and everyone's really scrambling. It was me, you, and Dan Horn in the office.
Yep.
we got the politics team on the phone.
Socially distanced.
Socially distanced. And, you know, we just went from there. And then it was whiplash. I mean, did your tweet say? On, off, what?
Oh, yeah, I went through. I don't have it in front of me, but it was on. Then it was it was off, announced by the governor. Then it was still really on officially. Then they took it to the Common Pleas Court in Franklin County in Columbus, and the judge there said, no, I'm not going to rule on this. I'm not going to make an injunction to stop this. It's still on. And then...
The process was to take it to a judge to make this request, and it went there, and it did seem like a foregone conclusion that a Republican judge in Franklin County was going to agree and say that this did need to be postponed. I mean, it's already at night. It's later. I think it was like at 7 o'clock at night. I mean, we're kind of going for the poll workers.
That's right, it was.
This is a very elaborate setup where poll workers the night before, they have to pick up the voting machines, go to the locations, make sure they're secure, set everything up. Voting starts at 6:30 in the morning, and they show up. They're still earlier than 6:30, but they are ready to roll. And it was mass confusion. Nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, but even then everyone was like, okay, this is kind of what's going to happen. And that did not happen. I mean, as he was talking and people were live tweeting from the courtroom, and Twitter has been extremely important here. It's almost like another conversation of where, how
Agreed.
You're getting your news through all of this, which we've always kind of known Twitter was for breaking news, but I'm like watching it unfold and you can kind of see his comments are hinting at that he was going to keep it on. I mean, it just flew through everything in flux, and candidates didn't know what was going on.
And you're right. Confusion ruled that 7-hour period there. Basically, this whole thing wasn't ultimately decided till around 10 o'clock, I think it was. And, our Jesse Balmer and Scott Wortman the next day put a nice TikTok together about that crazy whirlwind. I think they said whiplash of a day. And ultimately, what it came down to, for those who maybe aren't familiar or need refreshed on it, because it was so confusing, was that the governor basically invoked his administrative authority through the Ohio Department of Health, and rock star Dr. Amy Acton was declared a health emergency and allowed to basically postpone through those administrative
powers. The authority
powers.
To close the buildings for safety
purposes.
Yeah,
exactly. And then ultimately that then essentially postponed. And now the fallout of that is...
And poll workers were concerned about their health. First
yeah,
of all,
were.
You know, they skew a little bit older, let's put it that way. And people were concerned about what that was going to look like. How would you social distance? And so even like the people who were going to actually be putting on the election, they were really looking for this to happen for their own safety.
Another layer of this was that all the boards of election around the state were sitting there, and you know, our boards of election, the board was there. Our Scott Wortman again was at the board of election, and the confusion that was coming down. I forgot to mention this, but what was made worse was in this process, Frank LaRose's office sends out a message saying that the election is postponed until June 2. And it's like, whoa, wait, this hasn't actually been decided yet. And that turned out to be a mistake of an email. And so that throws whirlwinds and whiplashes into the whole thing. Ultimately, though, and so now we're in a holding pattern. The legislature, here's the bottom line, folks. Only the legislature has the authority to change a law. And this is about changing laws. Again, the administration had the ability to declare a state of emergency and shut the buildings down, but only the legislature has the authority to change the law on elections. The judge in Franklin County made the right decision. It's not his job to change the law. It's not an individual politician's job, the governor, the secretary of state, to change the law. It's the legislature's job. And so now they're going to take this up. We're in a holding pattern right now, but they're going to meet next week to decide when Election Day is actually going to happen. We don't know if it's June 2. They may decide it's June 2. They may decide it's, you know, April 1st. I don't know. But they're gonna make the decision, and they're the ones who should make the decision. Sherry?
So, you know, I don't think anyone really has the answers now. The thing I look to the most is these governor press conferences at 2 o'clock every day, because we're starting to hear things like, you know, this curve is still going to go up, and when it really is going to be over in, you know, 8 weeks. And so I don't think maybe setting the election earlier at this point, setting the election earlier than only to have to postpone it again. Yeah. There's so much uncertainty. And I do think that some of our elected leaders do have information that we don't really have. It's coming fast and furious. And, you know, it's not necessarily all the things that the public knows. You know, we saw this report out of the White House, you know, the secret report that really talked about, you know, how bad the United States is going to be hit. But those kind of reports exist, and those kind of estimates exist, and they don't necessarily tell the public because they don't want to panic people. And they're only estimates. They're only guesses. And so I'm kind of looking for them for guidance. And the truth is, when you look at everything, this is why your elections really matter.
Yeah.
Like, we're not electing people on personalities. What we're electing people on is the ability to run our cities, our townships, our state. And in this case, it turns out to keep us safe.
That's right. And oh, go ahead.
Well, you wrote a column today, so you should talk about that a little bit. Because, I mean, it had such a lovely headline on it.
Well, thank you.
And, of course, it was an amazing column, like all of them.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Well, that would get me to what I was going to say anyway about Governor Mike DeWine. My summation of this whole process was ugly and messy on Monday, and the issue I have was that the confusion that was caused by it, and the fact that it was done at the last minute. Had this been done on Saturday or Friday or maybe even Sunday, I think it would have been a smoother thing. Like, but to do it less than 24 hours before the start of Election Day was just chaos. Now the Ohio Democratic Party has sued to saying that Frank LaRose does not have the authority to set the date, that only the legislature does, which we said they are going to meet. At the end of the day, though, I think Governor Mike DeWine, this is not about voter suppression or voter like trying to tip the scales one way or the other. This is consistent with how the governor has been all along since over a week now, is that public safety and caring about people's safety and lives are his number one concern. And people can say he's being overly cautious, but we all know he's led the way. And that was my column today. Like, I really dug into his, you know, and a lot of things have been written, but I mentioned some things that hadn't, but his lifetime of experience, both personally and professionally, really has all sort of built up to this moment for him, that it's a heart issue for him, you know, that he really does care. He really, and I know it's hard. It might be hard for people to really believe that in these kind of divided political times, where we being society generally have so much distrust for politicians. But man, Mike DeWine is really, truly, honestly doing this for the right reasons, because he values human life. He values the lives of Ohioans, and it doesn't matter what you believe or what who you are, he cares about it.
Yeah, everything else can be fixed later.
That's right.
I do think that's kind of the premise we're working on, right? With like the relief that's going to come for people who have to stay home, and we don't even know all the details of that. I will say, I was looking back today, I was kind of emptying my email and text messages. My phone is full, as it is usually, even though it has like the most storage you can have. I was looking, and even on Saturday, I was making plans for the future.
Yeah.
Like, was I still going to a wedding, away? Were you still going on spring break? We were like, what are we going to do about the podcast? We were talking about like things still like they're kind normal, but just a little bit adjusted. And I think that's where we were on Saturday. By Sunday, it was becoming clear that he was going to close the bars and restaurants. And I don't think he made the election. I think we're based information on the things that he knew Saturday and Sunday. And it's not, he did seem to think through the election. It's not like at the time he's like, well, we're still going to have it. It seemed like it was okay to.
Yeah.
And then he had to make a decision at that point.
Great point. Yeah.
And because he was based on the new information. And I don't think even, like, let's say on Sunday night he knew something. I don't think he thought to himself, well, that's it. We're postponing the election. I think he thought to himself, oh, how is this going to work? And should we do this? Yep. And talk to people and got advice. Those things do take time.
Absolutely. And the other point I want to make on this, too, is that, you know, I've seen some people complain about, you know, whether it was fair or not. And I think, honestly, I think this is the most fair way to go about it, to have a fair election where every vote is counted, every vote is possibly counted, and everyone who wants to vote has a chance to do it. We would have been having the other argument, I think, had we been sitting here today as we record on a delightful Thursday morning.
Where there's perhaps birds chirping outside, we would have been talking about the newsroom. Sorry.
You know, we would have been talking about this really low turnout figure. I don't know what that figure would be. I don't have a concept in mind of what that would be. But then the argument would have been like, well, had if they would have pushed it back 3 weeks or something, it would have given more people a chance, or, you know, pushed it back a month or 2 months, you know, longer early voting or longer vote by mail, absentee voting. Then people would have had a chance to vote, but they were afraid to come out. And so that's why this result, that's why so-and-so lost, or that's why so-and-so won. And so now, you know what, remove all that. And I think to me, I think not to me, I just think that this is the fairest way to go about it.
The other thing I would say is, amidst all of the conversation, and I've been reading, you know, all of the things that have been coming down the pike about, should we or shouldn't we, no one's really saying he made a political decision to help candidates.
Great point.
You know, there is fallout. Who's this going to help and who isn't this going to help? But the truth is, no one is saying he made this decision to help his friend, or, you know, Republican candidates. Everyone does believe that he made this decision for people's health.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what?
I mean, for the most part, like sweeping political analyst has not been that.
And I'm really glad that people aren't saying that. And in the column I wrote today, at the end of the column, where I talked about, and this was really cool to see, Ohio Democratic Party Chairman David Pepper, who you and I both know really well, a former Cincinnati City Councilman, Hamilton County Commissioner.
So he has ground level experience with all of this. He's run campaigns himself.
Yep.
He's run even state campaigns. So he understands.
He understands, but he is one of Mike DeWine's, maybe the biggest political enemy in the state. But he has praised Governor DeWine through this process, thanked him for his leadership multiple times on Twitter. Obviously, the party is now suing the state over the election issue, but I don't think that overshadows any goodwill and good feelings toward, you know, that bipartisan, or really just removing partisan, the word partisan altogether. And it's like, hey, it doesn't matter Republican and Democrat right now. What matters is our safety, that we get through this, and then we can worry about Republican and Democrat and all that stuff down the line. Or, you know, maybe somehow we come through this and we sort of put down our partisan swords a little bit. I know it's very Pollyannish to think that there's still going to be that divide, but maybe the divide won't be as wide when we come through this. And I don't know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but
no, the idea here is that we do get back to normal, that we weather this as best we can, and we stay safe and we get back to normal. So no.
The new normal will not include lesser divided lines.
People have their beliefs, and those aren't going to change through all of this.
Yeah, that's right. No, sorry, dumb point by me. Wishful thinking by me.
All right. Should we talk to the mayor?
Let's bring the mayor in.
John Cranley.
Hi, Mayor.
Hey, John.
Hey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, thanks for
doing this. You're ready to roll?
Sure.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast and live on the Cincinnati.com hotline from his office at City Hall, Mayor John Cranley. Mayor, welcome to the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
Thanks for having me in these very interesting times.
I can't help but think about the last time that you were on the podcast where we talked about the music venue, and that seems so far away from where we are now.
Yeah, and you know, as we're speaking, we just discovered for the first time that Hamilton County has a positive ID.
Yeah.
And so, you know, literally as we are speaking and recording this, I know it'll record later, but or play later, but as we're recording, we are dealing as this crisis is consistently done, changing by the minute, by the hour, by the day.
Even though, obviously, we were expecting this, how did you feel when you got the call?
You know, it's like a punch to the gut. You know, it's, you know, here it is. And, you know, we're prepared and we're preparing for the next several months, but it nonetheless is, you know, it becomes more real when it's actually here in the community.
John, thanks for your leadership during this time. I really feel like you've shown just incredible, strong leadership. You've been a rock for the city. And, you know, just personally, I thank you for that. I want to ask you, going back to when you, you know, hey, you're thinking about running for mayor. What was it back in 2012, I think, is when you decided you were going to run for mayor.
Right.
You know, at a time when you're thinking about running for an executive seat, I mean, you know, you're exploring running for governor. Does anything like does it ever run through your mind, like, at some point, if I'm elected, I'm going to have to be ready to help my city or my state or whatever you're doing through a major crisis? Take us through that. Like, is that something you even think about? Like, what, you know, I know obviously you're thinking about doing all these projects, and, you know, I remember the big thing for you was, you know, basic services and budgeting and all that. But do you think about, does it ever run through your mind, like, my goodness, I might have to lead this city or, through a crisis at someday?
Absolutely. It did. It does. It has. And, you know, candidly, you know, let me sort of give the conclusion and back up with some of the background history and experience. This is exactly why those of us who value public service and have chosen to make, you know, the various sacrifices to live a public life or do it. Mm-hmm. It's for exactly these types of moments. And what's interesting about it is that I go back to my education, Jesuit education, of the most important thing in times like this is never to waver on keeping the public good first and foremost and making decisions that are about helping the most number of people and not about other political agendas, and being honest and transparent and leveling with people, even with bad news, throughout this crisis, because that's how you get through it, is being honest, trying not to invoke panic, but also not keeping information from people, which I think is critical. It's also the case that I've had, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this over the last several days. You know, for many, many years, I have told anyone that knows me well that nothing would compare to what we went through in April of 2001.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I was a very young city councilman, and I remember spending an enormous amount of time, I mean, literally days on end, I would spend with Mayor Lucan in the mayor's office, And it was a similar mindset that we're going through now, in the sense that there were press conferences at least once a day. There was incredible information coming in. There was national attention, et cetera. And it was incredibly stressful, and people were scared, and it was awful. It was difficult, and there was a great deal of tensions in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in addition to that experience, which is, you know, it nothing until this experience as compared to that experience, and we'll see how long this lasts and whether it ends up being more impactful than what we went through in April of 2001 and then the many years to follow that. I also think about negotiating with the Justice Department over the aftermath of 2001. I think about the pension crisis. I think about, you know, losing a police officer and firefighter in the line of duty. And then, of course, in that same year, 2001, we also went through 9/11 and rallying, and Mayor Lucan rallied this community after that. And so there was, I will say that, you know, there is something to be said for experience. And I certainly know that having been through, you know, those experiences, police, fire, deaths in the line of duty, 2001 and September 11th, you know, pension crisis, those things certainly add perspective, experience, and have helped me get through this, even though this is obviously a totally new animal with totally different impacts and needs. But it certainly is something that I believe that I'm glad I'm able to serve at this time.
What are your days like now? How have they changed?
Well, they are, you know, every day we start with a call with the manager and the health commissioner, Alba Moore, and then depending on the issue of the day, it could be a police chief, fire chief, could be Kathy Bailey at Waterworks, could be, you know, whoever is needed to be talked to on that particular day to deal with a particular plan for that day. And we are, you know, moving very, like this morning is a great example. So this morning I went to Spinney Field at the Police Recruit Academy, because we are literally training our school nurses, who obviously are not in school right now, to become 911 operators in case we have, breakout of illness or we need to space people out and more people need to kind of take a day off in order to, so we're not overcrowded and we have more shifts. And we think that if there's a surge, there could be a huge increase in the number of people calling 911. And all I could think about, and I shared this with the nurses this morning, I was thinking of Rosie the Riveter, I think her name was, that famous poster from World War II,
yep,
of people transforming into different jobs to do what was needed for the war effort. And so here are, I mean, it must have been, I don't know, 25 nurses who are now being trained in something that they never signed up for, and these are trained professionals who went to a nursing school to be nurses, and now they're being trained to be 911 operators. And it's both crazy but inspiring to witness, and that is the spirit that in which we are tackling this crisis.
What was their reaction like? That's amazing. What were they saying to you about doing that?
I mean, I think, you know, in a big picture level, you know, everyone's sort of shell-shocked by the world, that how quickly this world has changed in the last 10 days. And so, I mean, there is a combination of shock in their faces, but also, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and get to work on this new job. And frankly, there's also some relief in the sense that, you know, tens of thousands of people have been laid off in the last several days.
Mm-hmm.
And tens of thousands of more will be laid off, by the time this podcast is playing. And so, you know, there's also a sense of gratitude that they have an opportunity to serve. I mean, we get calls every day from people who want to volunteer, and that's super nice. We need in the short term people that we pay and, you know, can, you know, for lack of a better word, command through the fact that they have a job with us to do certain things in order to maintain sort of that military chain of command that the manager has done such a great job of instilling. So we're not ready for volunteers yet, but we are deploying and redeploying our city workers to do the needs that that have to be done.
What are some other ideas you have for that? I know you have some other ideas in mind for big ideas, really, for jobs to help out in this time of crisis.
We're going to be getting into that over the next couple of weeks. I don't want to make promises I can't keep, and so we are fully aware that there is going to be a massive need for assistance at the federal, state, and local level. And so, you know, yesterday I spoke with Sherrod Brown. Later today I'll be speaking with Governor DeWine. And, you know, at the end of the day, think about this. Unemployment compensation, I think, is roughly in Ohio, the maximum is $485 a week, roughly, maybe give or take. 10, 20, 100 bucks, whatever. But call it $485. That means roughly $25,000 a year is what you would get on unemployment. So if you have a $50,000 a year job, which is about the median, you're immediately getting half your income a day later and for the foreseeable future. And that is devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're asking the federal government and the state government to do is to supplement that as best they can. We know they also have other needs, and certainly a state like the city is unable legally to have anything but balanced budgets. So the federal government obviously can print money, so it's easier for the federal government to do these things for the state or the local. And so that's why these ideas, sort of the Yang idea of $1,000 to everybody, is a great idea. And I would just also add that I think narrowly tailoring that to people on unemployment is even more important, because those are the ones who are literally having their income sliced in half on average, in some cases more than half, than everybody else, and yet their bills are still due. Now, obviously, you know, the city's not going to do any water shutoffs. The landlords are not going to do any evictions. You know, Duke has agreed not to do any shutoffs and things of that nature, which is wonderful, good spiritedness at this time. But that's not the same thing as saying that the bills aren't due, and there are other bills that won't be delayed, and food and medicines that will need to be paid for. And so this is going to be a massive economic problem that we're going to roll our sleeves up on. Now, in the short term, short term nowadays is like an hour, but in the next week or two, as the caseload spikes, you know, we have to focus on the public health issues, and then we will transition more into the economic recovery piece and economic stabilization during the next 8 to 12 weeks, followed by recovery. I'm glad, however, that certain things that people who can print money, i.e. the federal government, are talking about doing immediately, giving everyone $1,000, I think that's a great idea, and I hope they follow through with it.
You know, there's long been a debate in the city. You know, we do something very unique, which is running these health centers, city-run health centers. And should the city really be in that business? But here we are. At a time like this, how has that been helpful?
It's incredible. You know, it's interesting. Sherry, you're right. And I've been a participant and in those debates for a very long time, you know, because we're one of the only cities in America that still runs 6 full-time health centers, you know, for primary care and other services. And then the school-based nursing program that I was talking about as they are being converted to 911 operators. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that we have, you know, it is now clearer to me today than ever before the vital need for cities to have a public health department for exactly these types of emergencies. And if for nothing other, it's for sharing and evaluating the best public health data. I mean, for example, you had a debate that played out for several weeks where the president was saying that this was a hoax and no big deal and solved. You had an understandable debate about whether it was better or worse for kids to cancel school, because obviously, you know, you got parents who don't, you know, have to stay home and they can't work. You have kids who obviously need to learn, and then you have kids who receive their lunches at school, and what will this do to food security, et cetera, et cetera. All fair debates, all reasonable questions, but there's an actual public health experience and expertise that you need to rely upon in these circumstances. And clearly, for the short term, it is better to cancel school based on public health data. And trying to rediscover the importance of public health expertise in that we shouldn't be making decisions on our, quote, gut or our, quote, hunches, but to evaluate the history and the evidence is more important now than ever. And that is a vital role that our public health commissioner, Melba Moore, is playing, that Amy Acton is playing at the state. And it's candidly what should be guiding our decisions until we have this the contagion contained.
How prepared are the health clinics? You know, we heard a little bit of things yesterday at City Council, and the health commissioner Moore did speak to the Inquirer's Ann Saker. You know, we have, for normal times, we're totally prepared. But how concerned are you about things like swabs and testing kits, and where are we at with preparedness?
There's a couple of different questions baked in there. First of all, our health department workers are incredibly busy right now because they're required under federal and state guidance or the CDC to notify people who may be suspected of having coronavirus, and making sure they quarantine themselves, making sure that they identify everyone else they came in contact with during the period of suspicion that they might be, you know, positive, and tell those people to quarantine, and that is an incredibly intensive, time-consuming job for the folks that are doing it. And at the same time, we have, and I forget their titles, but the restaurant inspectors, let's call them, are working with our restaurants to make sure food preparation for carryout and drive-through is properly handled, you know, for all licensed restaurants in the city. And then on top of all that, our doctors and nurses in our actual healthcare centers are taking the necessary precautions to be as safe and still operational. But I wanted to point out the issue about calling people on either actual or suspected positive testing.
A call you never want to get.
Right. But it's also important that our health department is doing far more than operating the six health centers, is my point.
Right.
And people forget that it's our health department that that license restaurants in a city for, you know, safe food conditions. And so those folks are busier than ever right now, making sure that everyone is adopting the best practices for carryout and for drive-through food.
Is there anyone, you talked about the 2001 riots and Mayor Lucan at the time and his leadership. Is there anyone, and I know you guys have remained close through the years. Is there anyone for you, now that you're in that position of leading at a time of crisis, for you personally, is there someone or a group of people that you are, you know, confide in and just ask, like, hey, any advice on how to handle this? Any, you know, what should I do here? Is there a group of people or a person that you have that you're kind of leaning on?
Well, first and foremost, I rely on my wife, Dina, and she's been a rock to me and to our family. Mm-hmm. In addition, I do consult Mayor Lucan occasionally. He and I are still very close. I have an incredible team around me. Patrick Dehaney is just doing fantastic. You know, my direct team, Bobby Dillon, and of course the state solicitor is a great asset in difficult, stressful times, who never stops working, and frankly, the fellow mayors. And so we have Mayor Whaley of Dayton, Ginther of Columbus, mm-hmm. Kapsakavich of Toledo. The four of us talk and text daily, and we share what we're dealing with. Well, and all very similar. Obviously, we give each other great ideas, and have been extremely helpful. And then, essentially, with a few exceptions, The mayors have had an opportunity on a daily basis to talk with the governor, and obviously coordinating state and local efforts is vital at a time like this.
Look, I got a lighthearted question for you. I know it's yeah. crazy right now, so I'm sensitive to that. Any thoughts on you know, when things do settle down, what you personally are gonna, you and Dina and Joseph, your son, are, you know, going to be able to do on your free time to pass the time away? Have you guys talked about that? Like, what do you guys plan to do?
Over the course of the next 8 to 12 weeks?
Yeah, yeah. Just like on all these, on this, as we're all kind of quarantined and hanging out in our houses.
Yeah, well, last night, yeah, absolutely. Last night, we played this wonderful game, which is newer game, meaning it wasn't around when I was a kid, called Catan or Catan, which is, you know, it's a really cool, fun game. You know, where you try to figure out how to survive. We were introduced to this game a couple months ago before the crisis, and we kind of, you know, really thought it was a fun game. And so the three of us played that game last night, three nights ago. We played Clue, the old school that was around when I was a kid.
We love Clue.
So we're trying to do board games. We're watching, you know, my son and I are rewatching all the Star Wars movies on Disney Plus.
Love it.
My, you know, before the crisis, my son and I on Disney Plus watched all the Marvel movies again, and so, you know, there is something to be said for the quality time that we're spending, you know, at home. You know, two, three days ago, in our backyard, my son and I went out to toss baseball, and the way my house is laid out, there's sort of the ability, it's kind of on a hill, and so there's the ability to see a bunch of other backyards, probably 10 mm-hmm. backyards of other streets, and, you know, like back into our house, etc. And it was amazing that, you know, for the first time in my memory ever of living in that home, which I've lived in for over 10 years, that you could hear people outside in essentially every yard, spending time doing, now not everybody was tossing baseball, but everybody was doing different things. And, you know, I was joking with my neighbors. I said, this is what we always imagined our lives would be like, that we would be spending quality time with our families in our backyards. And so there may be some blessings in disguise in all of this. And it's, you know, since there's a lot of bad news, especially economic bad news, and there's likely to be a lot more bad medical news, it's moments like this that I think that we got to try to hold on to. And, you know, I think about my son, you know, who will remember that he got off school, et cetera, but, you know, 25 years from now, 30 years from now, he may look back on this and say that was some of the best times of my life because I got to spend so much time with my parents.
Yeah.
I did take Jack to the park. I took Jack to the park for like 5 to 7 the other night. At no time during a work week, and I know you're the same way, would I be spending time, which I would be working from 5 to 7, even if you go to work later than all jobs. But I had such a great time with him and just talking and like hanging out outside. And so, and the city parks, happened to be in Adelhi Park, we have lovely parks, but this area is so fortunate. I mean, I've already been on the website kind of mapping out, you know, we're going to go to Mount Echo then and kind of like work our way east is the plan.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We are encouraging people to take advantage of our parks. Obviously, it'd be helpful if it stopped raining so that the trails would not be so muddy. But, you know, Mount Echo has got some great, obviously, it's beautiful and the views are beautiful, but they also have some great trails. Mount Airy Forest, I think, is literally the most underutilized asset in our entire city. There are incredible trails that most people have never been on. Meaning, there are people have been on them, but the vast majority of people listening have never actually gone to walk those trails. And, you know, obviously that's true at Alt Park and Alms Park and French Park, et cetera, et cetera. Mount Storm. There are some wonderful opportunities to get out, and people need to get exercise, not just for, you know, watching their weight, but also for mental health. Exercise is very good for mental health.
Are you suggesting we shouldn't eat all the snacks in our stockpile on day one? Seems to be a thing.
It's certainly going to be one of the challenges.
I do want to give a shout out to Alex Coolidge, who with Rodney McMullen. I am interested if you've had how many conversations you've had with Kroger. We're very fortunate to have Kroger based here in a time of crisis. He did get to, he went into the distribution center and could not it could not have been more clearer. The food chain is fine and food is going to keep coming. Do you talk to him on a fairly regular basis?
Kroger?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We, you know, as you know, I gave Rodney the Cincinnati of the Year last year for so many things, from their recycling and reducing carbon footprint efforts to their brand new store in downtown Cincinnati, to supporting the high rise, to the jobs, to the expansion of 8451. I mean, Kroger has done more for our city's renaissance, literally, than any other company. By far. And obviously at a time like this, the whole country is depending on Kroger to keep us fed. And, if you've never read the book Good to Great, it is worth reading, which talks about certain companies that were always doing good but then turned into great companies. And Kroger is one of the very few that is that's in there. And one of the reasons it's in there is that they have a culture of servant leadership and of putting other people first. You know, what's amazing is that, you know, Kroger is, you know, one of the best capitalized companies in the country, one of the largest companies in the country. And, you know, if you run into other CEOs of other major institutions in the world, they might have bodyguards, they might have big entourage, they might have big offices. And Kroger has none of that. Rodney is literally one of the most humble men I've ever met in my life, and yet he is one of the most important people literally in the country right now.
Yeah.
And so we work with them all the time, and thank God they're here for us, and thank God they're here for the country right now.
Great, Mayor, great stuff. It was, you know, you chuckled there a few minutes ago, and it was good to hear you laugh, because I know it's been an incredibly stressful time, and thanks for your leadership again, and thanks for, in the middle of all this, taking some time here.
Well, I will tell you two last things, and then I have to go.
But, yeah.
You know, as you know, I've issued a number of orders that are public health-based, like asking people in public space, outdoor public space, to stay 6 feet apart, exempting families, couples, you know, dependents, caretakers, law enforcement, of course, and people in cars and vans and things like that. Reasonableness. And it's important that people take those seriously. But as you point out, there is a moment here and need to laugh or try to laugh and find humor in some of the craziness. And so I do want people to know that I have issued some humorous orders as well that are also good advice, such as I have ordered a temporary suspension of the 5-second rule. because, you know, people really should not be eating off of surfaces at this time until the emergency is over. And I can tell you this order, you know, really cuts to the heart for me, because I've definitely been a believer in the 5-second rule my whole life. So this is a sacrifice that affects me too. I'm also ordering the suspension of FOMO for the duration of the crisis, you know, which arguably is not needed because nothing is happening anywhere for anybody. No bars, no restaurants, no movies are open. So it's kind of an easy thing to order, but I just want to relieve fears that you're not missing out on anything. Spend time with your families and try to find a way to smile and laugh in the process.
Those are my kind of orders. Yep.
Mayor, thanks so much. Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye. You. Thanks, bye.
All right. Thanks to John Cranley for joining us here on the That's a Cincinnati podcast. Great stuff. We're going back to back special guests today, and I'm pleased to welcome in on the Cincinnati.com hotline, phoning in from his bureau, aka his home,
it's the Blue Ash Bureau.
The Blue Ash Bureau, executive editor of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com, Burl Love. Burl, thank you for joining us.
Well, Well, thanks for continuing on with the podcast under these challenging conditions.
Well, thanks for your encouragement and your support for allowing us to do this, and especially at a time when we're not working in the office. And it's my chance to quickly brag about Silent Phil, who has an absolutely beautiful, wonderful studio in his home, and we're all socially distanced, as we talked about at the top of the episode. So, and you were very socially distanced from us calling in. I want to jump to it, Burl. Wow. What is it? You know, the thing we asked John Cranley is, you know, what's it like to be the mayor of a city in the middle of a crisis? And from the leadership standpoint, I'll ask you the same thing. In the world of media, what is it like in a crazy, huge news story crisis to be leading a news operation?
That's a great question. You know, I have, first and foremost, our community in mind, our audience, because these are the times when they rely on us most to get quick and accurate information, and also to put it into context. A lot of our, if you hear a dog barking, it's because a deer just walked by, and my dogs are bananas. So anyway, I just closed my little office door here.
When Alex was interviewing Rodney McMullen, the FedEx guy came in, and the dog went bonkers, and I was like that TV news clip, like scurrying in the room, grabbing the dog to get him out of there.
We got to keep it real. But so, you know, we're working in real time, but we're also we understand that, you know, we have the largest news organization in our community, and we have, you know, beat reporters who have expertise in health and politics. And so adding that context and explaining what it all means, you know, Jason, your column today that got into Mike DeWine's head is a great example of helping people wrap their minds around what's happening and what our leaders are doing and what their motivations might be doing. And, you know, people are on edge, and the more we can help people understand things and explain things, you know, that's our job to do. So that's first and foremost. But as the editor, I also have, you know, I feel like the father of a very large family. You know, you guys are my kids, and I want to keep you safe, and I want to keep you out of harm's way. And I just sent a note out to some of the editors about, you know, I can tell because of the we use Microsoft Teams to work remotely, and I can just see that some people are, you know, have been working essentially around the clock, except for when they go to sleep, because I can see, you know, the timestamp in Teams of when people are communicating and pinning down stories and working. And so I just sent a note out saying, you know, in addition to all the measures we've taken for people to be able to work remotely and work from home, and we can get into this in a minute, but we had, you know, two people that were self-quarantining way before this all started because they were at a news conference in New Orleans where someone had tested positive. So I'm also trying to make sure that you all have the support you need, that you take some time to recharge and, you know, be there for your families who need you just as much as our audience needs you right now.
I do feel like Teams is almost like a journal of like what's happening and what's going to be the biggest news story of our lives. And it's unbelievable, like to just see how fast moving all of it is, like to look back over the day of what we've done is incredible.
No, I agree with that. It'll be, I don't know if it archives, but, you know, a year from now to go back and see, you know, we were still, you know, a week ago, a little more than a week ago now, I don't think we understood, even though Dr. Amy Acton was trying to tell us how disruptive this would be and how important these measures were to, you know, it sounds cliche now, but to flatten the curve so we don't overwhelm our hospitals and, you know, our healthcare providers.
When you
go back and see the change in tone of some of the conversation, it'll be interesting to go back and look and piece that timeline together.
I know. I said earlier to Jason.
When did you guys really understand? Like, when did it, like, click to you that this is going to be something like we've never seen before.
Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday for me. When Governor DeWine announced the closure of the restaurants, I was actually in Starbucks when he made that announcement, and I'm like, oh, this is for real.
Before that, I went back and forth with being so concerned for myself, our world, my family, during the press conferences and when the mayor would be speaking, and I would take it so serious. But then as soon as I'd kind of be a little bit in my real life, like talking to my friends and driving on the roads and you could still go out to eat, I was like, well, maybe it's not that serious. Am I being crazy? And I'm like, at that balance, I was just going back and forth. And, you know, since Sunday, I've understood the seriousness of all of this constantly.
So I think this touches on something that would be, I think, helpful for our audience to know, is that when we have these 3 times a day news meetings virtually, and we kind of go through, you know, the different editors and reporters kind of report out what they're working on and what they're hearing and what's coming up next and what time the next DeWine press conference is going to be, we also kind of share what's going on in our lives, and that really informs how we do our job. Because if our families are dealing with issues like, you know, we've been to Kroger twice and we still can't find, you know, bottled water and toilet paper. What's going on with Kroger? And that led to Alex making some calls and, you know, lo and behold, he's taking a tour with Kroger CEO, and seeing, you know, walking through their warehouses in Blue Ash. So, it's a very kind of human-based approach we have, and it's one that comes because we're here in this community living it with everyone.
Burl, I know this is a story like none of us have ever seen in our lifetimes and hopefully never see again. In all your years of newsroom leadership in various different Gannett sites, does this remind you of any story previously in your career of where, you know, or at least in a similar way of where you've had to, you know, you manage the journalism side and the personnel side and, you know, there's so much going on. Does this remind you of any other story through your life?
You know, they're all different. It does remind me, you know, when the news encroaches on your personal life, it really changes things.
Yeah.
When you asked me that question, the first thing I thought about was when I was the editor in Reno, Nevada, there were a string of wildfires that were moving closer to the city, especially the southern part of Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, I was kind of reporting on it, leading the newsroom like I would any other big story, sort of feeling removed from it a little bit, until we were updating the evacuation areas. And in my neighborhood, which I lived like 20 minutes from the paper, not even that, was listed as not mandatory evacuation, but one step away. It was recommended to be ready to evacuate or to evacuate if you were able. And I was like, oh my gosh, the first thing I thought about was, you know, my family and, you know, were we ready to get out of that house and where were we going to go? We had no family in town. It's just, you know, the three of us. And I'm thinking of things like, you know, I've got, you know, baby videos and pictures. Are they on a hard drive? Can I just, you know, just the weirdest things you think about.
Wow.
And so the kind of tug of war that goes on in your head and your heart about like being there and following the story. And then all of a sudden, you're thinking about your baby pictures. So yeah, it's happened a couple times in my career, but never one that has been so, this is a global situation and I've not experienced anything quite like this before.
The other thing I want to ask you about too, and you know, I think it was pretty prevalent at least a week ago and last weekend. I haven't seen a lot of it since on social media. But you see that or you hear that term, some people saying this is a media induced panic. When you hear someone say that, and What do you think of that? What would you tell them? What do you tell them?
Real quick, those people have been deleted from my personal social media. Sorry,
so,
Burl.
I actually touched on. So I wrote a column a couple days ago. It's all blurry.
Yeah.
Where I was, telling readers about, how we first started to mobilize for covering this story. And at the end of it, I said, now I have a favor to ask all of you. And that's,
yep.
You know, it's only human for us to, when we're stressed and we're under a situation like this, to find someone to blame. It's just a human reaction. And I understand it. And I understand that some people are blaming the media for inducing this panic. And so I ask people to kind of take a step back and if they feel that way, do a little more research and try to understand what we're trying to do here. Because, and then I quoted Amy Acton, who I'm going to paraphrase now. She said, when you are managing a health crisis like this, there will be people in the beginning that are saying you've done too much, you're overreacting.
Hmm.
And then at the end of it, when you actually see the impact it has, especially if we have, significant number of deaths and things like that, they're going to say you didn't do enough. And so, the same can be said about informing our community. People are going to say that we're doing too much. And then at the end of it, they might say that we didn't do enough. And I don't want the latter to be the case. If I'm going to err on the side one way or the other, my promise as the editor is that we're going to do everything we can in the most responsible way possible. Because I think, to end up in a situation where you didn't do enough, that's not where I want to end up.
Yeah. And we have, and just, I know I told you this, and I'll say this to the audience, like, that your leadership through this time has just been awesome, and I can't be more appreciative of it, and thank you for it. And to think about, it's so weird to hear you talk about, I remember you sent an email out to the team the other day, and I'm paraphrasing as well, but like, it was something along the lines of like, hey, working at home is a different thing for a lot of people, and so make sure you're taking care of yourself personally. If you got to get up and take a walk, I can't remember exactly what you said, but I remember it was just like,
and we know you really mean it.
Yeah, exactly. And so just to manage that side while you're also managing the journalism side of we talked about teams, and so many people are the thing, and this is a credit to you, is that this newsroom, so many people have been like, just raise their hands like, hey, how can I help? Like, the one thing too I love about you is that you're willing to come on here and you're transparent with our audience and our listeners, and we can talk about some of this behind the scenes stuff. And I think, here's a good example of that. Like, some of our sports writers this weekend are going to be covering some news shifts. And one of them did last weekend. And, just at times like this, it's really an all hands on deck mentality. And I really hope that reflects to the readers that this is a passionate group of journalists who care deeply about Cincinnati, or greater Cincinnati, and our audience.
Well, thank you, Jason. And I just wrote a little note for your file. I think your review is coming up.
That's what I was going for.
No,
I'm a straight shooter.
If you're doing the kind of work that we do, it is a little bit of a calling. And I think when situations like this happens, it really does bring out the best in people. And I think you could say that about, our community as a whole.
Yeah.
I've started to see the tenor of the conversation on social media change to be more supportive of one another, and, looking for the helpers and making sure they get the attention that they need. And, you know, all of that, you know, we never let a crisis go to waste. And so I think this is a situation where I expect to see that, you know, especially in our community, people are very good at pulling together and helping each other. I'm moved by the people who are making it a personal challenge to eat carry out and get carry out food to support, you know, the restaurants. People are posting on social media about, hey, I'm stuck at home. If you're a healthcare worker and you're not allowed to work from home, but you don't know what to do with your kid, you know, I've got some time, I can help, you know, watch your child. All of this is happening right before us. And there's people out there that are being jerks, and there always will be jerks on social media. But I'm starting to see, you know, just like in our newsroom, I'm seeing our community as a whole start to pull together. And I think that's, you know, that should give us all a little bit of hope.
Have you gotten any, generally, what's the reader feedback on your emails and phone calls, Ben?
You know, most of it has been very positive and supportive.
Yeah.
People are wanting more information. You know, and when they ask questions, this kind of leads to the type of discussions we have in our news meetings. But, you know, people, I've seen a gentleman, Sherry, you probably both saw this, but someone who at times has been critical of us because he's an active member of the politics Facebook group, just wrote a lengthy testimony about how much he appreciates the work we do and asking people to support us with a subscription so that we can, you know, stay in business and do our work. So all of that's been very heartwarming to see.
I do think we should point out that you did, in an era where we are really trying, it's a new era of journalism where subscriptions matter, and we hope people do still subscribe so we can keep doing this work in general. You did, like many newspapers, make all of our pandemic coverage free.
Right. So we did that pretty early. Mm-hmm. It was optional. It wasn't a corporate mandate. It is right now. The newspapers that were slow to do that are all doing that now because it's a corporate decision, but we right away, and we've always had that latitude for the sake of public service and the community good to take some stories off of our meter.
Every other team's message is a reminder. Hit free button. I finally learned how to do that.
No, I'm glad you said that, because if a reader stumbles across a story and it asks them, and it blocks it, it's just because someone forgot to do that. It's not because we're trying to be jerks or whatever, but it is a manual step we have to do to take a story off the meter. And sometimes people in their effort to get the story up quickly will forget to click that little box. But what has been super cool to see is that we've had some of our biggest days with new subscribers when we have had most of our content off the paywall. So I think people, you know, we do put that little note in every story saying that the story is free as a public service, but please support our, you know, support local journalism.
Yeah.
And so we've had some of our strongest, you know, days of subscription growth since this started. And I think that's, you know, that's a great thing to see, because I would hope that people value what we do, even if they don't always agree with how we do it sometimes. The thought of not having a free and independent news source, and we're lucky in this community because it's still a pretty competitive market with news. We've got four TV stations that are also doing the Lord's work, so to speak. So, you know, we need that support.
Sherry, do you have any other questions?
It's just, you know, we're taking it day by day, and we don't know what's going to happen. And it is still, I think, the early stages, but I hope people stay with us, and I know that we'll continue to be ourselves.
I do have one more question, Burl. Totally a lighthearted one.
All right.
Anything that you like to do, you know, just while you're not working, you know, while you're cooped up at home, Is there anything that you recommend, games or activities or anything? We asked John Cranley the same thing, and he gave us a couple ideas for games and anything that you particularly like to do while I don't know, I hate the word quarantine right now.
Self-isolating.
So two things. My kid has this like massive Lego set that's a little bit daunting, and he hasn't wanted to start it without me, and he's had it since Christmas, and we really haven't had a time to dig into it. So it is all over the place right now.
I love this.
Us too. Say the exact same thing.
Yep.
It's like, how is that not done from Christmas? It was expensive, but here we are.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, so whatever it is you like to do, like, do it and don't feel like, you know, you are spoiling yourself. So I like to be outside.
Yeah.
And there's a little stretch of woods behind my house, and actually our photographer Liz Dufour lives like on the other side of the woods. And so I saw she had taken a picture of me out in the woods, because it's been another goal of mine to make a little trail through the woods, just so that if you want to walk through the woods, you can. It's all overgrown with all kinds of stuff. And so when I've had a moment here or there, when it's not been raining, I've been outside, like with a hatchet and a saw, just kind of like forging a little trail through the woods. And that's the best thing for me. Just any excuse to be outside and getting dirty.
She thinks that's going to be like a wine tunnel, but okay.
Well, guess what? I think tomorrow night, I'm actually going to, don't tell her, and maybe she's, you know, doesn't listen, but I'm probably going to sneak through the woods and leave a bottle of wine on her back deck.
I love it.
Since she threw that out there. Yeah.
Man, great stuff, Burl. Thanks again for coming on. Thanks for all that you're doing, your leadership in our newsroom and in the city or in the region. I was just thinking about, I was just getting ready to say, you know, see you soon, but I don't know when we're all going to see each other again. Yeah. So see you in July or something.
See you in Teams.
But we'll be, see you on Teams and on text and phone calls. So great stuff, Burl. Thanks so much.
All right. Be safe and wash your hands.